Welcome into ESPN FC. We have a lot to talk about a little later in the show. Gab Marcotti will be with us to tell us the latest on the Kylian Mbappe to Real Madrid deal. We've got Craig Burley, Shaka Hislop here with me in the studio, Kay Murray. And we'll also be hearing from Jan Agafyortoff, Mark Ogden and Frank Leboeuf as well, because yesterday we were talking about Cristiano Ronaldo potentially leaving Juve to go to Manchester City. 24 hours later, it's confirmed he is returning to Manchester United. Jan, how surprised are you with this news?
Well, I'm surprised how quick this has gone. You have had feasts or you have speculations gone on forever. I guess yesterday when the Manchester United people realised maybe that's what Jorge Mendes tricked at, to try to sell him to Manchester City so Manchester United should wake up. But you will have Sir Alex Ferguson calling his son. He would like to have him back. And Manchester United got one of the most exciting players in the world coming to them. So it's unbelievable. Manchester United got a fantastic transfer window with Varane, Sancho and Cristiano Ronaldo. And before Craig says it, yes, it put Ole Gunnar Solskjaer under pressure. He needs to win something now.
I think what he's saying,
actually,
Craig...
Jan, I wasn't going to say that today. I was going to stay away. I was trying my best to stay away from it, and he's put me in it. But I can imagine... it's a bit like, I think, Berbatov and Van Persie, but going to Man City and sort of hijacked by Sir Alex. I don't know if this happened, but you kind of get the feeling his former manager phoned him and said, you can't be doing that, son, going to City. And so it's no real surprise, particularly when you watch Man United last week with Martial up front. Clearly they need goals. Yes, they have Cavani for that, possibly. But still, at his age, he's producing, and I think 30-odd goals last year, again, for Juventus over all the domestic and European competitions. And so, yeah, I mean... a short-term fix, for sure, but potentially a fix.
It looks as though Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can attract top players. Looks as though he had some help as
well.
Listen.
Yeah, I don't think...
he had some help here. This is Rio Ferdinand saying, I rang him straight away. What's going on? Tell me you're lying. I'm like all the fans. I'm exactly the same, and we are all the same like that. Please tell me you're not going. Agent Bruno, welcome back home, Cristiano. So apparently behind the scenes, these guys were playing a part in this deal happening. So Mark Ogden, tell us what the details are of the deal and what was going on behind the scenes.
Well, yeah, I was told that Ronaldo was getting text messages, phone calls from his former United teammates as early, in the early hours of the morning, 1 a.m. UK time. He was still being, you know, badgered by his ex-teammates to not go to City and to realise that he would tarnish his legacy with United and their fans if he did that. Now, you know, ultimately, Ronaldo's all about Ronaldo. I think we all know that. And I think that there's two things that matter to him. It's winning trophies, personal trophies, and adulation. But I think he places adulation and being loved ahead of actually winning trophies. He just wants to be loved. And I think he knows that if he goes to United, he'll be absolutely adored by the United fans. If he'd gone to City, that would have gone. It'd have been almost a hate figure, really. And the City fans, I don't think they'd have loved him. They'd just used him as a bit of a rod to kind of beat the United fans with. So I think he's gone there because he knows that he'll be loved, but he also knows that he's going to get paid a lot of money. I think if he wanted trophies, he would have gone to City. I think City offered him the chance to win things more quickly. But as the guy's saying that, you know, United couldn't really allow Ronaldo to go to City without a fight. And, you know, I'm told that United entered the deal quite late last night and made it clear to Ronaldo and Mendes that they would get it done. They were happy to pay a fee to Juventus, which City weren't. But also, this deal has been kind of floating around since late last season, early summer, when it was clear that Ronaldo wanted to leave Juventus and his people were kind of testing the water around Europe. And United were approached in, you know, June, May time as to whether they'd be interested. At the time, they weren't. But, you know, things changed, and I think they realised that for the money involved, you know, a fee that could rise to maybe 24 million euros, the wages, we don't know what they are yet, but they won't be small. They're making the highest paid player at the club. Ultimately, this deal could actually end up making money for Man United rather than costing them money, because it'll help in terms of boosting sponsorship deals. They'll get more money commercially. So from United's point of view, I think it's a win-win. He wins off the pitch, but he wins on it as well. So it's a great deal. And also, you know, let's be honest, the Glazers win as well, because they've got the fans on side now, because end of last season, it looked like that they couldn't do anything to get them back on side. But now they've brought Ronaldo back. So almost all is forgiven for the Glazers.
The actual idea from both sides, do you think, Shaka, in bringing Cristiano Ronaldo back, what are the objectives?
Well, I think it strengthens United quite clearly. It brings world-class talent, and it brings a personality to a dressing room that we've said time and time again lacks leaders. No, they have that player who gives them that direction, who maybe brings that winning mentality, that steel to them. You
are
understand
they title
that.
Challengers?
Sorry?
Are they now title challengers?
Yes. Listen, we talk about Manchester United. Manchester United are supposed to be title challengers. So whenever we're discussing titles, Manchester United have to be in the discussion, though they've disappointed over recent seasons. But to United's credit, as a club and with their fan base, I don't think they could have allowed that move to go through. Credit to them for stepping in. Credit to the entire Manchester United fraternity, for family, for stepping in and hijacking this move in the way that it did. The most surprising thing for me is how quickly it happened. We've said time and time again that signing players like Ronaldo and Messi are so layered, that it takes so much to get them on board with all their commercial deals. Yet still, when Messi decided to leave Barcelona, PSG got that deal done in roughly 48, 72 hours. And once Cristiano Ronaldo decided he's leaving Juventus, all of a sudden United step in, and within 24 hours that deal is done. So it speaks to the value and the running of those clubs, certainly in getting the deals that they want done, getting them done quickly.
How much better does he make this United side, Frank?
Well, a lot better. He's an example in the dressing room. He's still a competitor. He's still very fit. He still want to win silverware. So it's definitely a plus to Manchester United and put them as one of the contender, which they were in for me before signing. So it's definitely a plus. I'm very pleased because yesterday, I thought it would be some kind of an issue for somebody that I thought was faithful to his past. And I love fairy tales, and I'm happy to see him, going back to a club who made him becoming a legend. So it's fine, it's nice, and it's a nice story for me.
It's interesting that a lot of his former teammates were reportedly texting him to go to United, most of them working in the media. So much for no bias there. But I think it's been a super exciting transfer window for Man United now. Mm-hmm. What's the objectives? I'm going there, winning the league. The goals are going to obviously help them. Interestingly enough, the player that left Manchester United is not the player coming back, not just because of age, but he's transformed his game. He was a flying winger when he went to Real Madrid, and now he's a striker who has got some young players around about him with Greenwood and Sancho and others. You've got the guile of Pogba and the guile of Fernandes. Maybe they are lacking another dynamic midfielder in there, but they could cope with that with the players, potentially with the players they've got. But I think this is I can understand wanting to go to City in some respect because of their success and potential success. They are further down the line than United, but it is wholly understandable that one, this United team are in a better position than they were a year or two ago to challenge, and two, he was loved by United fans, so it's kind of understandable that he's quickly chosen to go back to his old club.
Okay, if I may say that we're talking about on the field, I think he will produce, he will get his goals. But I think that's also what Manchester United, a couple of three last years, have been lacking is excitement. Craig was talking a bit about this create excitement. Manchester United, for me, since I was a kid, was all about great players. Going back to Bobby Charlton, you got George Best, and when Ferguson came in, it was all about the class of 92 and so on and so on, and Beckham and Giggs and so on. But the last couple of years, Manchester United, okay, second place, but now you get a player in that the whole world knows. He got like billion, trillion followers on every social media there is. This makes United global again, in my opinion. And Mark said it, maybe they will earn money on this deal, but still, it will make them excitement. Because sometimes the last couple of years when it came to Old Trafford, even if they had good games, they didn't kind of excite me when I watched the game and I watched their playing. So I think this is also perfect. Yes, the Sancho can come in and do the exciting things, taking people on, because Cristiano Ronaldo is the ultimate one, which I think is very important for Manchester United.
The excitement and the global appeal is definitely one thing you can't deny. But for you, Craig, does it make them title challengers having Ronaldo in the team?
Yes, and I felt they would be in a title fight of somewhat anyway. Whether I didn't think they would go all the way to the end, could have been wrong, but I do think this stating the obvious, I think it hugely improves him. But if you had said to anybody, pundits or supporters, before or during the summer, you're going to get Rafael Varane, one of the most esteemed defenders of the generation, Jadon Sancho, one of the most talented up-and-coming youngsters, and Ronaldo was coming back, they'd have snapped your hands off. So yeah, it does put them clearly in a better position to challenge.
How's it going to work, though, do you think, Mark, in terms of his playing time this season? We've seen him, as he's got older, taking a bit more rest. How often will we expect to see him playing?
I think he'll play all the Premier League games that he's fit for and all the Champions League games that he's fit for. I think he might not play in the Carabao Cup ties, but, you know, Ronaldo and Messi, they just don't miss games, do they? They carry on and they play and they play. And I think Ronaldo would be a great example to his teammates. I think, you know, when he was at United last time, I was told by teammates at the time that Wayne Rooney sacrificed a lot of his game to make sure that Ronaldo could hit the heights that he did. You know, Rooney would do a lot of his running, he'd do a lot of the hard work. Now, obviously, Ronaldo isn't going to put a lot of the work in again, but he's got, like Craig said, such a young group of players around him. Sancho, Rashford, Greenwood, even Dan James at times, Martial. They will do all the running for Ronaldo to make sure that he is at absolute best and he doesn't have to overexert himself, shall we say, to kind of drain his resources. So I think that Ronaldo plays in all the games that United need, the big games, the Premier League, the Champions League games, and they'll be hoping the more the merrier, because the more games he plays, the more chance they've got of winning something. And that, let's be honest, Ronaldo feels like a trophy right now for United, because they haven't won anything for 4 years. So signing Ronaldo is their biggest win for 4 years. They want that goal better than that and actually win the trophy, and I think this is the year they have to do it. All questions on Solskjaer still have to be answered. Ronaldo makes it a lot easier to answer those questions, but he has to win a trophy, and Ronaldo makes it much, much more likely they're going to do that.
Picking up off what Mark said there, is there any downside to it? It seems like a silly question, but is there any downside to Ronaldo returning to United?
No, I don't see it, because generally he's kept himself fit. He's a couple of little niggling things in the last few months, but he's no spring chicken anymore. Look at the stats. The stats are still great. He's not going to run about chasing everybody, but that's not his job anymore. He plays more between the penalty area now, right? He thrives on balls into the box. He's others that will do the work rate for him. It's a short-term contract. There is commercial viability to it off the field. There's football viability on the field, even at this age, no doubt about it. So this is a win-win. It's one of the reasons City were want to sign him, because they know getting goals is a commodity, and that's what he should bring. Unless his stats drop off dramatically, he's going to be 20 to 30 goals again, and that's going to put Manchester United in a pretty good position.
The only downside for me has got nothing to do with Ronaldo. As we sit right now, if I'm Edinson Cavani, I'm wondering what does this signing mean for me?
My number.
Exactly. Not just that, but
it means you better get a big coach.
Exactly. But again, that has got absolutely nothing to do with Cristiano Ronaldo. And to Mark's point about Rooney doing the running, given one of the best players of our generation in Wayne Rooney doing the running for Ronaldo, it's a far cry from some of the other players that Manchester United have right now. Very talented, yes, in Rashford, Greenwood, Daniel James, as he mentioned. I'm not sure Martial is the player you rely on to do any of your running. But that's two different level of player. And you're asking two different asks of them. Can they support Ronaldo in the way that he needs now, in a way that Wayne Rooney can? I'm not so sure.
You know, the other thing he brings is, I don't know what the boys think, he ups the ante for me in professionalism. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be one of the keys, is that most players are winners, but when you look at his desire, and at that age, that's, you've got to take that into account. You don't play with his numbers for that amount of years unless you have and keep yourself in that shape, unless you've got the desire. When they look around the dressing room, these players, and they see him, and there's some very good players at Man United, they look at a guy that's going to demand week in, week out, mm-hmm. that they are reproducing the performances from the last week and the week before. And one of United's problems has been recently is that they haven't had that consistency. They've had some good performances, then it's slipped off. He brings a different dynamic to the professionalism and to the word winner. And some of the other big-time players in this United dressing room are going to have to step up now, I think, because he sets the benchmark.
And when you look at it as well, Mark, do you wonder if you're seeing that Cristiano Ronaldo has returned to Manchester United, does this help them going forward in the transfer window in attracting big names like Erling Haaland maybe next summer?
Well, I was just going to make the point that people have asked today, does this mean that they're not in the running for Haaland next year? Well, no, it doesn't. I think it actually helps United get Haaland in the sense that it raises United's profile, as Jan said. They become an A-list club again. They've got Ronaldo. They become that super Hollywood club that they've always been, and they've not been for 4 or 5 years. So that they're now a much more high-profile club. And I think, as we know, that Erling Haaland idolises Ronaldo. I was told by his dad, Alfie, a couple of years ago that he actually changed his diet, Erling, to eat fish because he heard Ronaldo eats fish. So he idolises Ronaldo. So if he has the prospects of having a season with Ronaldo at United, then that only strengthens United's hands. So Man United now are back in the big league in terms of signing players. So it makes them a more attractive proposition. And obviously there's going to be a lot of competition next summer for Erling Haaland, we know that. But having Ronaldo there, perhaps with a trophy as well, makes United's case a lot stronger. So yes, I think it does make them more capable to sign the best players, because having Ronaldo won't cost United a lot of money. As I've said, they'll make money out of it. So United are back in the big league. They just have to be back in the big league in terms of trophies now.
Jan, you are the Haaland whisperer. What does it do for United? And why are you laughing there?
I'm just laughing because there are so many things now into the speculation, because Alfie Haaland, that Mark talked about, he played for Manchester City and Leeds. It's going to be very popular to then send his son to Manchester United. That's point number one. There's going to be a lot of speculation around that. I'm a bit sweaty because I ran from Signal Iduna Park, where I saw Erling Haaland get that 3-2 goal and they win against Hoffenheim today. And of course, there were a lot of speculations here now as well, because what would this mean for Erling Haaland, and will Manchester City save that place for him now, where they didn't get Kane, they didn't get Cristiano Ronaldo? So there are so many speculations, but I think that what we will see into next summer, it's going to be an unbelievable competition in and around him. And when we are talking about things are going fast, I think that also we should know that these big players in our football game, they talk to each other all the time. They will have different options. They will have different roads to go, and they know what's going to go there, and they're talking about ideas and all that kind of thing. So it's going to be an unbelievable year coming into the big decider next season. And remember, although we are talking about that clause, Dortmund, they hope they can keep him for many years. And there was a big thing today about PSG, if Mbappé going, that they will get Haaland and a fantasy offer now at the end. So Sebastian Kehl, the head of sport, he came to me at pitch side today and said, do you want to make the interview in French today, and so on. So Dortmund are quite, they know all about the speculation, and we know that they will just increase into next summer.
Yeah, and you mentioned Man City. So Mark, Man City have now missed out on Harry Kane, Cristiano Ronaldo. I know this week you wrote an article about who they are looking to bring in to score those goals up top. What do you think is going to happen with them now, and who are the targets?
Well, they will desperately try and bring somebody in, but the targets are diminishing because, you know, there aren't many strikers out there you can rely on to score a goal. Now, I do think that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is a possibility because, you know, he's costing Arsenal a lot of money. He's a guy that would score goals in the Premier League and would instantly solve this. People like Robert Lewandowski, I'm not sure Bayern would let him go. And you look at people like Vlahovic as well. The City have got a problem, they've left it too late.
Do you think City do have a problem with what's happened in this window?
At the moment, yes. I mean, they're still going to play this cool, attractive football, but they're going to have to rely on goals from their playmakers and De Bruyne and maybe Gundogan again, who had a terrific season. But, you know, clearly the manager there does not trust Jesus as a out-and-out striker, and they're desperate to get a natural number nine in. And this United signing sends a message out to Liverpool, Chelsea and City as well, is that United mean business. So I would be concerned if I was Guardiola at the moment. Yeah, I mean, they'll still play most teams off the park, but, you know, to ask playmakers to be natural goal scorers and win games all the time, yeah, it happened for them last year. Chances of it happening again are, I think, slimmer, and they diminish by every season it goes by. So there's a reason that these natural strikers are in demand, no matter whether you're at Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, United, City, Liverpool, whatever the team is. you need goal scorers. City don't have that at the moment.
If you would like more Cristiano Ronaldo talk, make sure to head on over to our website. You can catch Mark Ogden's article, and also Gab Marcotti has written one about Ronaldo's return to Manchester United. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Borussia Dortmund managed to blow not one but two leads in this game against Hoffenheim. That was until Erling Haaland popped up in injury time to score the winner. 3-2 it finished, and wow, he seems so unstoppable. After the game, Archie Rintoul caught up with the victors as well as the losers.
Christoph Baumgarten, that must be a gutting way to lose a football match. Tell me how it feels right now.
Yeah, we were really disappointed. I think we fought so hard for this game. We came back twice, and then the machine scores again. It's so hard, but I think we deserve this point.
Is it all the more painful when you think you've stopped the machine and then he strikes in the final minute?
Yeah, he's crazy. I think we played really well against him. The second time here at the stadium, it was the same last season, and then he was there again. Also the same today. Yeah, it's so difficult to stop him. He's one of the best strikers in the world, but I think, as I said, we did really well. But he only needs one chance, and he scored again today. It's crazy.
Gregor Kobel, talk to me about what your emotions went from at 2-2 to 3-2.
It was unbelievable. I don't know. Right now, it's really crazy. It was a really emotional game. I think for us as a team and also for the fans, I think we had a great spirit. It was really, really late when we get the 2-2. And to come back there and make a third goal, it's really unbelievable. And I have to say, it's a great spirit.
What did this result show about this Dortmund team? Because if the result's 2-2, the outlook is completely different.
Yeah, of course. Like I said, we had a great spirit today. It's a really positive thing. But at the end, I have to say, we can't just talk positive. Today, again, we get two goals. I think it's a little bit too much. We have to be more focused on this end. But it was a great game. We took this momentum. We keep going. Really nice.
Erling Haaland, since joining Borussia Dortmund, these are the stats for him. And don't forget, he is still just 21 years old. What a future he has ahead of him. Now, Jan Agur Fjørtoft was at this game today. And as Craig said earlier, Jan, Dortmund didn't make it easy on themselves.
No, they didn't. And Hoffenheim, they had 9 games in the league without losing. And so they very competed. Competing with Dortmund in this game. The first 15 minutes were unbelievably intense. There were 3 yellow cards. Hoffenheim hit the post and so on. And Dortmund didn't look so well, but it came over then in the second half, we show in the highlights there. And I think the goalkeeper, Kobel, who did a very good game today, by the way, says it all. He was maybe Dortmund's best player. And it just shows they want to be the challenger to Bayern Munich, but they won 5-2 against Frankfurt. And then they lost in Freiburg. And then they're winning now. They conceded 6 goals. I must say, there is only allowed 25,000 in this stadium now. You fill it up, there is 80. And believe me, when there was the equalizer for Hoffenheim, it was so quiet. And then everything exploded in the 93rd minutes or so when Erling Haaland made that 3-2 goal. And with the coach, with the players, it was more a relief than joy. And now they're going into the time where we're going to play the national teams, and they go away. And so this was a perfect timing for them. But if you ask me, do they look like a title challenger? I would say no. There are too many blind passengers, sagt man in Deutsch. So it's people that shouldn't be in that team if you're going to be a title challenger. You have Meunier, Paslak, Witzel, too slow at the back there. And so for me, they're not going for the championship. But they got Erling Haaland and the will he just showed, even in this game, it was a bit difficult for him. But still, what they did there at the end, that was not typical Dortmund. It was typical Dortmund to concede that goal on a corner, exactly the same goal they conceded against Frankfurt. But it was not typical Dortmund to turn it around in the overtime, because they would never have done that with Favre, because you knew if Dortmund got something against them, they would just lie down. They didn't do that today, and I think that's what Marco Rosso will take away from this game.
What did you make of them, Craig, after watching today?
I think it leaves more questions than answers, as Jan was saying. The negative side is they've got a problem at right back, still got a problem at centre back. Guerrero is a good player, but he got cut out badly. The positives, they're graceful going forward, you know, the touch from Reina for the goal. Bellingham is another terrific player. Royce is playing actually some good football, Marco Royce. And of course, then you've got Erling Haaland, who is actually quite quiet today by his standards, but ultimately got the winner. And he's still to figure out some sort of partnership with Daniel Malin, who is a very pacey player. So it'll be interesting to see as the season goes on whether Marco Rosa continues with trying to go with Haaland and Daniel Malin with the pace, or whether he sees he might have to go with an extra midfielder and leave Haaland up there on his own. But I think one thing we know for sure, if they don't defend better, they won't win the Bundesliga. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. Everything else is in place apart from that part of the field.
I think that's the thing. When you look at Dortmund's defending, when you look at the two goals that they conceded, both times they had numbers back. Don't track runners for the first, and then Marco Reus from a set piece, for some very strange reason, stays in and keeps everybody onside. And that kind of lazy defending from Dortmund may very well cost them. They're fortunate that they got away with it this time, just because of the likes of Erling Haaland and what they have going forward. But this is by far a good Dortmund team that we've seen. They get 3 points, but they know they're lucky. I thought for long spells, Hoffenheim had the better of the game. Jan mentioned, hit the post. Dortmund's goalkeeper, without question, man of the match on the day, though he won't grab the headlines. And they go into a break, as Jan said, now with a late winner that makes them feel better than that performance was. But you get to reset, and you get to reset from a good spot. But it was not, by any means, a great Dortmund performance.
Jan, just quickly, I heard you say something when Craig mentioned Daniel Malin.
Yes, it's interesting. I talked to Marco Rosa after the game, and I say, is that one of the decisions you've got to make in this team, to play with two strikers or play with one on a front? And I said, but it sounds better, doesn't it, to play with two strikers? It makes us more offensive. But I think that he will see that as well. He likes to play with two strikers. But I think that today as well, as Craig mentioned, not only, I think Malin was better today. That was his best game for Dortmund. He used his body. There was some good runs, some good turns. But I think they have to find a more chemistry if you're going to have a partnership up front there. And if you put a striker in there, you will always miss one in midfield that will kind of get these passes in. And maybe sometimes it's all also about the runs of Erling Haaland. Sometimes when you have another striker up there, you kind of block them. But maybe that is through training, through playing together, to find a chemistry between them. At the moment, I don't see that chemistry. And that they have to solve if they're going to play and keep on playing with two up front. There are some players coming back from injuries. You have Hazard out now. Maybe if Hazard was in, he would play with that midfielder and keep Malin out of the team. But he's also a big signing for them, so they want to get him going. So it's going to be interesting. A lot of challenges for Marco Rose. But oh my God, was he a relief after the game that he at least won that game. Because at one point, as Archie talked with the goalie, at one point that would be close to crisis for Dortmund.
I actually talked with the goalie. You talked with Erling Haaland afterwards, right? What did he have to say?
oh, relief. And he said, this was not a good game. And like Craig said, yeah, he had a quiet game, but still it came to chances. And what we saw today in the game, there were more crosses. He looks like more like a, he had a couple of heading opportunities in the first half, but he was so relieved. And now he's playing for Norway against Holland and going into there with a good feeling and so on. And with all the speculation in and around him, I'm amazed that this young... say that, Craig?
Yeah, and was he happier with you this week? Because he looked really angry with you last week with your questions.
you can ask anyone a comment, make an interview with him. He's not. That is just the way he is. He just walks away. You can see last week, and I asked him about Bayern is showing some weaknesses, and he was like, no, and you could just saw his face. That is just the way he is. He was very, very happy. He doesn't like this interview position, and some German channels are not very happy that they don't get all the interviews they use from the Bayern Munich player. But May, I would just want to say to end that sentence, because there are speculation about PSG is Manchester City, and we keep forgetting that he's only 21, and to kind of block everything out, I think that is an amazing thing to do for a young lad.
Well, they can now rest easy for the rest of the match day. Round three is underway. Dortmund with 3 points on the board already. And this are the rest of the games. You'll be able to see all of them on ESPN Plus, and we will have wraparound coverage of the Bayern Munich and Hertha Berlin game. Join myself, Jürgen Klinsmann, and the rest of the team for that. This is Leonardo speaking about Kylian Mbappe. He said, the only thing I can say is that nothing has changed compared to the last 2 days. It's the same situation. Gab Marcotti now joining us to talk about this. What can you tell us about Mbappe, Gab?
Nothing's changed. It's the same situation. You just heard it there. Nothing going on, nothing to see here. Look, I think at this stage, what we're looking at is sources very close to Florentino Perez, including Jose Felix Diaz from Marca, said that they believed a move was imminent. They've obviously made, I think now it's 3 offers, bumping them up each time. Paris Saint-Germain officially saying that he's not for sale. Privately, certainly media have reported that if they reach a certain number, I think 220 million euros, that's their valuation. Personally, the way I see it, I just don't see the value in Real Madrid continuing to pursue this and increasing the number when, as I've said many times, Kylian is the fact that I've been covering Cristiano all day. Kylian Mbappe wants to move to the Bernabeu, and you can get him for nothing on January 1st. But I think all this shows is, I think Real Madrid wants to send a message to the rest of the world that he's their guy, that they're serious about it. And I think they want to make sure as much as you can that between now and January 1st, when he can sign that contract, nobody else comes close to him. I don't believe that they realistically think that Paris Saint-Germain are going to relent.
So what do you think is actually going to happen then this summer, Gab?
Again, Real Madrid say they're really, really confident. Maybe they are. Maybe that 220 million figure is right. Maybe it's a little bit below that. Just to me, it makes absolutely zero sense to spend that money now. And so I kind of think that, like I said, this is about laying out a marker. Mbappe stays. He's a professional. Does not extend his contract, obviously. And then January 1st, he commits to Real Madrid for next season. And what that means is that all this money that would be going to Paris Saint-Germain to strengthen the squad, and don't forget, they're going to be rivals for Real Madrid in the coming years. All that money, instead of going to Paris Saint-Germain, some of that money is going to go to Mbappe, and a lot of that money is going to go to strengthen Real Madrid even further next season. And I genuinely think that's the most logical thing to do. And I think ultimately, I just can't help but wonder whether he's making all these bids knowing that Leonardo's going to turn them all down.
If he does stay, Frank, how is he going to be received back in Paris? Will it be okay for him for the season ahead with the fans?
Yes, it will be as long as they have results. And the fans, they boot him, you know, when the speaker launched Mbappe's name, you know, before the game against Strasbourg. But it was before he was on the field. When he was on the field, he produced, you know, scored a goal, gave two assists, and the fans, they were backing him up. So it won't be any problem, you know, as long as they have results. And they know the strengths and the power of Mbappe, you know, inside on the field. So I don't see any problem whatsoever. They want him to stay. They boo him because they're desperate to see him staying and lining up with Messi and Neymar. They want to see that history coming up, and it's why they push him to stay, and they're desperate to see him staying.
Shaka, it sounds like obviously crazy money when you know he's free next year. Mm-hmm. But given the fact that he's free next year, maybe Real Madrid are thinking, OK, well, many others might come in for him and be able to attract him then, including PSG, if it's a good year this year.
Yeah, listen, that's always your risk when he is in everybody's price range and on free transfers. A similar discussion we're having around Erling Haaland and his release clause in 12 months' time. But if you're Real Madrid and you know that the player has in the past made it no real secret that he'd love to wear the white of your club at some point in his career, I think, To Gav's point, I think you're doing the right things. You making an effort, not really expecting that you're going to sign him, but it says to everybody else that he's ours. It says to Kylian Mbappe and his team that we are this interested in you. But secretly, you would prefer to wait 6 months or 12 months, as the case may be, get him on that free transfer. You can give him the kind of contract that he clearly wants, and it affords you to do so much more with the money. So I think this is a win-win for Real Madrid, in that if PSG continue to have a hard stance as they've shown so far.
So Real Madrid making noise to be seen to do so, do you think, Craig?
Well, I echo everybody. I think patience is the key here. I mean, it's all they have to do is wait less than 5 months and they can sign the player on a pre-contract. And whilst there's always a risk that a player could be turned by somebody else, I think it's unlikely in this scenario because he's made it clear that's where he wants to go. And so, as Gab was saying, it makes no sense, particularly in this financial climate, when you're trying to rebuild your squad, which Real Madrid are trying to do and going to have to do, is to go out and splurge a couple of hundred million plus on a player who you can sign in a free contract in 5 months' time. So patience is the key here. That might not be what Kylian Mbappe wants to hear, but I think that's going to be the best prudent business all round for Real Madrid. And I think he'll be a PSG player until the end of the season.
Yeah, and you can keep up to date with all the latest on what's going on with Kylian Mbappe and other moves in the transfer window over on our website.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
A little look at the Premier League standings after the first two rounds of action. Who's that on top, Shaka?
8-goal West Ham. In two games, you mean, Kay?
Chelsea and Liverpool behind them, and the two face
trailing,
off this weekend.
Trailing some way off.
I mean, they're all level there, as you can see.
No.
Chelsea have so far had a perfect start to the season. Liverpool have two. Both sides are yet to concede. Craig, who's most likely to concede in this game?
Both.
Yeah?
Liverpool with most of the injured players back from last year, Andy Robertson, who's just signed a new contract, I believe he's not quite fit yet, but Virgil van Dijk has been. And that's going to be a really good battle between Romelu Lukaku, just in, got his first goal against his second debut for Chelsea against Arsenal.
But then the two Arsenal centre-backs, I think the guys talked about it last week, tried to have a fight with him. And, you know, so Virgil van Dijk's going to be a different cup of tea for Romelu Lukaku. And in some ways, I could see that being a big part in how the game goes. But I really think two really evenly matched sides here in terms of ability. Liverpool are at home, obviously, but I'm sensing a little sit in the fence draw here for me.
You know?
I'm leaning Chelsea on this one. And listen, Craig's right. These two teams, not a lot to tell between them. And then Liverpool have been very good at home. That run has to come to an end at some point. I just feel that of the two, Chelsea are the one who are trending in the better direction. Romelu Lukaku comes in, first game, scores. Barely been there 10 minutes. I think Chelsea continue to improve. I also think that Chelsea have more weapons than Liverpool, dare I say, right now, who I still think are trying to refine that form of a couple of seasons ago. So I'm just leaning Chelsea on this one.
Well, let's bring up the odds then, shall we, for this game that's coming up. Liverpool taking on Chelsea. Liverpool win 3-2. Draw 9-4. Chelsea winning 2-1. We've got your predictions as well. Don't make me do odds. It's the worst thing ever.
Can't do odds.
All right. So Craig Burley has stuck with the draw.
Yes.
He is on the fence. Yes. So too are you, Frank Leboeuf. You think it's going to be a draw as well?
Yes. I think it would be unfair to compare what we saw last season with Liverpool. Liverpool is going back to its best, and they're very competitive. And Chelsea is also competitive and following, you know, the path of winning the Champions League. It's going to be a major game, fantastic game. I think in the middle of the park, I would say that Chelsea is the better side, but offensively, even if Lukaku is back, you know, to Chelsea, I think Liverpool has with Salah and Mane, for example, one of the best strikers in the world. So it's going to be even. It's going to be a fantastic game, I think, to watch. But I see a draw, which will be a good result for Chelsea away from home. But I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic game with a fantastic atmosphere.
Another big game coming up, Man City against Arsenal. Arsenal showed everybody how not to deal with Lukaku. Man City, huge favourites here, Shaka.
Yeah, they are. And understandably so, given what we've seen from Arsenal in particular. City still without a striker. We thought maybe that situation would be resolved by now. But this is still the City that won the title last season. We'll be playing with confidence, which you cannot accuse Arsenal of. At home, at the Etihad, I just feel this is City's game, and easily so.
But Arsenal knew how Chelsea were going to play and still couldn't adjust or cope with it. You know, Reece James was getting all that room down the right-hand side, and Tuchel hasn't really changed his system. And here we have a game against Man City, and you rarely know where some of these players are going to pop up. So how the hell are Arsenal going to be able to cope with this unless they've, you know, watched some miraculous videos during the week after the West Brom game and they've figured it out? It could be a real painful time for them. I don't fancy them defensively. They're not strong in the middle of the park. And apart from one or two of the young boys, have been quite weak up front. So there's not a particularly good picture to paint about Arsenal at the moment.
It's a sad testament that we're talking about these two teams, traditionally the Big Six, and it's less about how Arsenal are going to get anything about out of this game, and it's more about how do City throw it away. And that is just how far Arsenal have slid.
Oh, wow. It's going to be a difficult one to talk about, probably, for some sides of the fans. Anyway, we will be talking about it tomorrow. Dan will be back. ESPN FC is available, as you know, 7 days a week. Over in Serie A, Inter were in action away to Hellas Verona, coming from behind to beat them 3-1 and make it back-to-back wins. That sends them top of the table. And it was quite the debut for Joaquin Correa, scoring two goals on the day. Great stuff from him, hey, Gab Marcotti.
How about that? El Tuco Correa making it count. It was big. I mean, he scored two great goals. But also, you know, Inter, I thought, weren't great in the first half, especially in midfield, as Ibu Di Francesco's team making things very difficult for them. But you talk about Simone Inzaghi making the right changes. Correa just arrived. absolute brilliant start. And obviously he's working with a manager like Inzaghi, who knows him really well and knows all the matchup problems he can create for opponents.
What's the feeling back in Italy then about this Inter side with everything that had happened? It obviously wasn't great to see Lukaku go, but it's been a positive start for them.
It's been a good start. And look, I do not think that they are as good as they were last season. But obviously it's 6 points from their opening two games. And there's also a school of thought that says, you know, after 2 years of Conte having you wound up tighter than a drum and shouting you at you and motivating you that way, you know, Simone Inzaghi's much more in the Ancelotti mode, you know, sort of the big teddy bear, the player's coach, if you will. But he's also, I think, a guy who's very smart tactically and obviously did really well at Lazio in a difficult, high-pressure environment. And he did it in a completely different style from Conte. So I think that's a positive. Like, in the end, I don't think there's a substitute for quality. Dumfries isn't Hakimi, Dzeko isn't Lukaku. But that said, I think this is an Inter side that can beat you in different ways. Certainly perhaps less monothematic than Conte's Inter was. A side that will go horizontal as well as vertical. So far, so good. Again, I stick by what I said, and I've gotten some abuse for it after those first two wins, but you know, Simone Inzaghi is in his first year. It's only been a couple games. I think we need to remember that and see where they are.
All right. Meanwhile, for Juventus, this was the statement from Ronaldo. Now, we've got it in English here. We don't want to upset Gab and show the Italian version of this one. But he says, "Today I depart from an amazing club, the biggest in Italy and surely one of the biggest in all of Europe. I gave my heart and soul for Juventus. In the end, we achieved great things. Not all that we wanted, but still, we wrote a pretty beautiful story together. You will always be in my heart." Gab, what's the feeling then? Oh, actually, let's just take a look at what Allegri said. He says, "I'm not disappointed by Cristiano Ronaldo. It's part of life. Ronaldo should be thanked for everything he's done, including the example he set to our young players, but we need to move on." So overall, is Ronaldo's time at Juventus seen as a success, Gab?
That's a really good question. And I think, you know, I think the first thing we need to know, realize, is that both things can be true. Cristiano Ronaldo could have performed to the best of his ability, and I think he generally did. And, you know, obviously the goals speak for themselves. You know, he was durable. He didn't just score a lot of goals, but he was durable. He played a lot of games. He was always available. He was a good example for others. Very professional in training, looking after his body. That can all be true. But then fundamentally for me, the question is, if you can go back, do you do it again? And I think Cristiano Ronaldo was bought at great expense and with an absolutely enormous salary, with the idea that Juventus not so much could win the Champions League, although obviously I think that was the expectation of the fans, but that Juve would make that quantum leap and move into that sort of top four of elite clubs by revenue, become a super club by revenue in that sense, alongside Barcelona, Bayern, United, and Real Madrid, who, in whatever order, always seem to occupy the top four. So it was a commercial operation, I think, as well as a footballing one. And that ultimately didn't happen. And it didn't happen, again, COVID played a big part of it. I think also the club made some poor choices in terms of personnel and the pieces they put around them. And so I think, you know, were they to go back again, I'm not sure they would do it again, knowing what they do now. And that's not Cristiano Ronaldo's fault. I think that what you're going to see over the next couple of days, and it's inevitable when somebody leaves, is you're going to hear little stories about, you know, how sometimes when the manager was doing a tactical session, Cristiano would be like, "All right, I'm not going to be a part of this. I'm going to go in the gym and train by myself," maybe because he found it boring, maybe because he felt he needed to do that. Other situations where, you know, maybe people made exceptions for Cristiano. But equally, you know that that's Cristiano. You know that's what you're getting when he comes in. So I think that's a bit unfair. Overall, I think a lot of people understand that this Juve team needs a rebuild. And all it means is that without Cristiano there, the rebuild is going to come quicker. Because I'll say this again, and I think United fans will realize this: if you have a talent like Cristiano in your team, you have to build the team around him. And if you build the team around him, you're going to be more limited in what you can do tactically. It's going to affect other players around him. You're going to make a choice where you say, I make him the centerpiece because he's better than everybody else. I think Juve were ready to go and do something a little bit different. And so I think a lot of people, you know, really aren't necessarily upset. Maybe they are a bit annoyed, and I think this would be fair, is if he wanted to leave, why didn't this happen earlier? Why didn't he make his feelings known, you know, back at the end of the season or in June? Presumably there would have been teams interested in him back then.
Do you think they'll look back and wonder what could have been by not putting the right pieces around?
I think right club, wrong time, with the way I would sort of sum it up. That's a very simplistic way to look at it, but I think it has got some credence that when you sign a player like him at his age, you have to have, as good as he's been, and he still is, at times, then you have to make sure that every little piece of the jigsaw around him is unfortunately, that's the way it is with a player like that, that every piece of the jigsaw is in the right place. On top of that, there was a revolving door of managers, and one of them hugely inexperienced, and Pirlo, as good a player as he was. And so, you know, I don't think he left, personally, I don't think he left anything on the table for a guy of his age. But it, as Gab said, there was factors of a pandemic and other financial issues, and other teams got stronger. And it just, it is what it is. But for sure, I think one of the things they will say is, you know, with the transfer window, the end of it looming, is there's not a lot of time left for Juve to go. There's a bit of time, but not a lot of time to go and start doing some business without Cristiano Ronaldo.
I think that's the thing. It's just a matter of timing and Ronaldo and Juventus for me. Listen, Juventus had been dominating Serie A for so long, yet could not deliver the Champions League. And trying to figure out how to make that happen. And then all of a sudden, Ronaldo announces that he's leaving Real Madrid. And it's when players like him, when proven winners like him become available, you move without thinking about what those other parts may be or what else you may need. You go to get what you feel is the final piece of the puzzle. But Craig is right to point out, for all their domestic domination, for bringing in Ronaldo, you can't have that revolving door of managers as they did in three years and hope to be able to build on experiences or successes. And that ultimately, I think, is what costs them.
One thing we have seen today is Eden Hazard linked with joining Juventus, could be on loan. This is a look at his numbers since joining Real Madrid. It obviously hasn't been too sparkling for him since leaving Chelsea. So what do you know here, Gab? What's the talk been? Ancelotti was asked about it in his presser.
I obviously, people in Spain are taking this very seriously. They're asking Ancelotti about it. I think this would just be madness. Wouldn't make any sense whatsoever. Eden Hazard is a great player, but if you're going to commit, first of all, if you're going to commit to rebuild, you're not going to do that. You bring in a player on loan of Hazard's age if you think he's going to put you over the top. I don't think that's where Juve are right now. They are committed to rebuilding. That's before you get into Hazard's wages, which, you know, even if you take him on loan, presumably Real Madrid would want Juve to pay a big chunk of them. Before you get into Hazard's fitness issues and the fact that I think he's only played a couple more games for Real Madrid than I have in the last couple of years. And then also, I think the other thing is his position. You know, Juventus, when it comes to wingers, that's actually an area where, you know, between Chiesa and Cuadrado and Kulusevski, they kind of like what they have. And if you're talking about number 10 types, which obviously Hazard can do that too, while they have Paulo Dybala, I think they will move for another striker. But I think it's going to be a forward. It's going to be a forward with pace, and it's going to be somebody who can provide an alternative to Alvaro Morata. And already some names have been chucked around. But I think it's more likely that they go in that direction than, you know, entertain the possibility of Hazard. Hazard would be a repeat of the mistakes that they made in past years where they were looking for quick fixes, in my opinion.
Okay, a lot of that talk coming out from Spain, as Gab said. You can hear more from Gab on the Gab and Jules podcast that is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, that's all we've got time for on the latest edition of...
I'll tell you what, Mallorca would be a great club to play for.
Wonderful.
Well, it's a holiday destination, isn't it? You're just being holiday.
It'd be wonderful.
All week. Getting a suntan.
And doing well as well. No losses yet for Mallorca. See you later. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Craig Burley, we've got Shaka Hislop, Gab Marcotti and Frank Leboeuf with us to answer your questions on our special Friday edition. We'll start with Chris. And we'll start with you, Frank. Was this Ronaldo and George Mendes' plan all along? Tempting United to make a move by offering themselves to City, betting that United was never going to let that happen.
Well, I'm not sure I understood the question. You know, I'm sorry, Keith.
So, did they plan to do this all along, knowing that United would never let him go to City?
Double bluff.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know, you know, one day, if we'll never know what really happened, you know, in that matter. Overall, what I feel and what I really know is, that's a good story, and I'm very pleased that Ronaldo signed for United, because with all due respect to Man City, I know I love people being faithful. And seeing yesterday that he was about to sign for Manchester City, you know, changed a little bit my mind about the guy. And now knowing that today he signed for Manchester United, made me feel good. So I like it. I don't really care, you know, if there is something underneath or whatever happened with Manchester City.
Sounds like Craig, I don't give a stuff.
What's that?
No. Do you think that they had this planned, though?
No, I think City were...
No.
No, City are obviously keen for a front man. But so are United. I mean, particularly having watched them last week. So, no, I don't think it was that at all.
Gab?
Kay. No, sorry. You guys... When Solskjaer today said that, oh, I didn't realize he could be leaving Juve. I mean, if you look closely, I would assume his nose got really, really long and just nobody noticed. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo's situation was known to everybody going back as early as May. There was absolutely no plan here. I genuinely think he literally just decided at some point, and I don't know what the trigger was, but he decided at some point in mid-August, oh, let me see if I can get a move. Let's see what else is out there. And obviously they tried it with Real Madrid, obviously. They tried it with Paris Saint-Germain. They tried it with City. And they tried it with United. And I think City had a firm price. And Guardiola today, when he said, I think very, very clearly, when he said, you know, it's not up to me if he comes here, it's up to him. Well, that to me says, this is the contract, these are the numbers, these are the numbers for Juve. If you like it, then take it. If not, you know, see ya. And I think at that point, that left Manchester United, which, again, it doesn't mean Manchester United are second choice or whatever, but I think it does mean that there's no plan behind this, because if there was a plan, he would have signed for United way back in May. They would have never extended Edinson Cavani, wouldn't have given him another year, and he would have had all of preseason to go and fit in with the squad. And the one mystery, I think, still is what prompted this change of heart? What prompts him in mid-August to just say, oh, yeah, I kind of want to leave? That, I think, is the big question.
All right. Shaka, Stevie Nickelback says, which was a bigger surprise, PSG announcing...
I must admit, I like the names better than...
Oh, there's some brilliant ones, aren't there? There's some we need to be careful with, too. But that's a good one. Which was a bigger surprise, PSG announcing the signing of Messi or Man United announcing Ronaldo? Do keep in mind that Ronaldo was heavily linked to Man City just 24 hours prior. That sounds like a leading question.
I know.
Keep in mind.
I'll try. The biggest surprise for me was... Messi to PSG. I just never thought that, and despite everything last year that happened and how close he came and the Borough facts and all that, I never thought that Messi would leave Barcelona by all accounts. And but we know that whole story. But as to this tweet, that was the bigger surprise for me.
Do keep in mind, though, that Ronaldo was heavily linked to Man City 24
hours
prior. All right. Craig, what's your favourite memory of watching or playing against Ronaldo when he was at United?
Well, I didn't play against him because he was a bit younger than me. But I did, yeah, I broadcast some of his games, so I was working there. So, yeah, I mean, what's to say? I mean, he came in as, I mean, he's just another player who... What are you doing?
Nothing.
He's having some bad memories.
Carry on.
But go on, tell us
you
your
know,
tell us
right. Right. Yeah, you know what's... You know, I'm going to have to live through this all over again.
He scored his first ever goal for Man United.
Yes.
And you're in goal.
Yes.
Was that your favourite memory of Ronaldo?
Was scoring on me?
Yeah,
you see? Oh, God, kid.
My memories...
It's fading.
General, with all the...
Your memory in general
so many
good.
Games, I just... But, yeah, another young player plucked out by Sir Alex and nurtured in... And you know, Ferguson turned another guy into a terrific player, really.
Do you remember him taunting the Middlesbrough fans? And they said, why do you think the Middlesbrough fans hate you? And he said, maybe it's because I'm too good. And he couldn't help but laugh. Because it was just his character completely.
Is that not the case when most people play Middlesbrough?
Oh, come on, Craig.
Oh, sorry.
How did you do against Middlesbrough?
Beat them 4-1 with Derby. Right. That's how bad it was.
All right, then, we'll move on, shall we?
Right, I did, didn't I? Well done, Frank, about the FA Cup final. 2-0. There you go.
There's no need to bring all these
bad memories.
Ender League
Cup final.
Yeah,
Ender League Cup final. You know.
Yeah, I know very well, thanks.
Good memories. Thank you.
Everybody beat Middlesbrough.
We did end up winning one cup in the end in 2004, so it was okay
in the end. Yeah,
this
is count.
They all count.
Good.
All right. Alex says, are there certain drills or training techniques that the older players would do more of rather than the younger players to get them ready for the season?
Yes.
Craig, this sounds like one you can answer.
The drill would be you sit in the training room with a cup of tea while the younger players are training. I'm being serious. Some players do that, have to do that.
You have to rest.
Some players, there are some players, or there used to be, and I at one point I was one of them, would train maybe once or twice a week in between games because of knee problems or back problems. And that's something you just have to manage. And of course, I think one of the things the older players have to do is one, get to training a little bit earlier to be ready for training. Just to actually get in a physical position to be ready to train, because you're working with back problems and all the... It's called age. It's very difficult.
I never did that, Kay. As a goalkeeper, I was always the hardest trainer on the field.
Of course.
Throughout my entire career.
Do they still have boot boys? Do they still scrub the boots? I don't think that happens anymore, does it?
No, I don't think they have to do that anymore.
All right. I heard Frank laughing there.
Yeah.
Did you have a story about this, Frank?
Yeah. No. I would have said, you know, maybe sleeping more than the youngest, stretching more. And do some yoga. I would have been the coach. Everybody over 30 would have to start, you know, having some yoga lesson to stretch, to strengthen in a more deep situation their bodies to make sure they can last longer. No,
Brad Friedel credits that. Remember Brad Friedel went on this ridiculous run of games without ever missing. He credits yoga for
that. Namaste.
I tell you what, the Italian boys, I think Frank knows this, the Italian boys were incredible.
Read Gab and Viali's book. They tell you all about their training methods.
Oh, I know, yeah. And I've seen that. I've heard about the training methods at Juve under Lippi and stuff. And when Viali and Di Matteo and Zola and others came in, it was we used to stand there with a cup of tea watching them before training. I mean, the guys were in the gym, stretching, strength conditioning. We were like, guys, we're going training, and they're going, no, this is part of our training. Oh, is it? Right.
I think Italian players would call it work rather than just football, and you see it differently.
Yeah.
All right, Craig, Eddie says, do you think Solskjaer has the right man management skills to handle Ronaldo in a dressing room without upsetting the apple cart?
Yes. So one of the things I think that he has is good people skills. I haven't changed my analysis of him yet as a manager, But I have always felt he's a guy that the players respect, and he's usually pretty honest, and he seems a likeable individual. So I don't think managing egos is his biggest problem. I think where people ask questions are his team selection and sometimes his tactics. But I don't think there'll be an issue. I think he's actually managed most of the players pretty well.
I don't think Ronaldo needs a whole lot of man managing, in all honesty. I don't see that as being an issue at all.
The next one has to be for you, Gab. Nishay asks, will Cristiano be considered as a Juventus legend?
As opposed to a legendary player who played for Juventus? It's interesting. I mean, people are going to debate this forever, right? Because there's always going to be somebody who just rattles off his numbers, and that's fine. And those are incredible numbers that he attained. I'll throw out a stat which I found researching my story today. Only two players in Europe's big five leagues scored more league goals last season than Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't know if we should have an impromptu quiz for who they are.
Yes.
You should all know who they are.
Okay.
One is obvious. One is Lewandowski, obviously.
Right.
And the other one is Lionel Messi, who scored one more goal than Cristiano. You know, does that make you a legend? I think relative to the expectations when they bought him, there was a school of thought that this is the guy that puts us over the top. This is the guy that, you know, will single-handedly carry us to win that Champions League. Obviously, it didn't work out that way. I don't think it's Cristiano's fault. You know, they made other bad decisions. There was a global pandemic, of course, which hurt Juve more than it hurt other clubs or other Italian clubs anyway. But equally, I think there's people who are going to look at, you know, when they were knocked out against Porto, there's people who are going to wonder, you know, did he ever feel a part of it, an intrinsic part of it, the way, for example, somebody like Carlos Tevez did when he came to Juventus and sort of immediately clicked with everybody. You know, was there some distance there? Maybe it's inevitable that there's going to be a distance when you are so much greater than almost any other player. And when you've already written, and you have such a long story with another club, with Real Madrid, and then, of course, before that, of course, the 6 years at United. So it's a very valid question. I think the way he left probably won't sit well with some people, because I think they're fairly going to say, well, if you wanted to leave, couldn't you have told us this at the end of last season rather than waiting until, you know, the end, perhaps leaving Juventus in the lurch in terms of finding a replacement? And one more thing. I don't know if you guys remarked upon this earlier, but if you do leave and you are going to write, you know, a farewell message, you talk about how Juventus and Italy, blah, 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 the fans are all going to Turin, are all going to be in your heart. I'm sure he's very sincere, but I send this out. Dude, whoever does your social media, use the freaking spell check, please. I'm not blaming Cristiano for this, but the number of misspelled words and stuff that didn't quite make sense in Italian in there, I think people are going to use that to hammer him a little
bit.
So
that's what's happening.
That's probably not fair.
Yeah,
Stevie Nichols got another job. He's now typing out Cristiano's tweets.
Yeah, Stevie Nichols is writing Cristiano Ronaldo's posts in Italian.
They should have had Gab sub it.
But, you know, going back to that point briefly, I mean, one, you know, legendary status, I don't think he'll be too fussed about it. But I think, one, he wasn't there long enough. And two, the other thing is a lot of people put legendary status and trophies together, which is not always the case, because you think about somebody like Matt Letizia at Southampton, who played for one club over his career, and there's no doubt he was a legendary status at Southampton for some of the performances he put in and some of the goals, the great goals that he scored. I mean, it's not, sometimes as a player, it's not your fault regarding the supporting cast that is around you. You generally can't control that. So, and in some sense, this has been part of Cristiano Ronaldo's period at Juventus, was the supporting cast wasn't as strong as maybe he thought it was going to be during that period.
Frank, you were waving. I think you had something to say.
I had to go.
Say au revoir.
No, not enough to go. I think I know the story of Juventus very well, and it's a huge club. and achieving many, many things, you know. And I followed Juventus in the 70s and the 80s, you know. And I saw Platini playing with Boniek. But also, we also followed, you know, Alessandro Del Piero, Nedved. Those people are real legends, for sure. Rossi as well, the striker. Those people are real legends. I think Cristiano Ronaldo is one of the biggest players that Juventus had the chance to see playing with under their shirt. But he didn't stay long enough for me to be considered as a legend, and didn't win the Champions League to be considered as a legend.
Okay, Frank, I'm going to stick with you for this one, and I'm going to ask the guys in the studio as well. But Frank, as footballers, you have had pretty structured, scheduled working 6 days a week and many hours to be ready on game day. So basically, they're asking, once you retired, how did you cope with all the empty hours in the day?
Well, it was hard at first because you stop, you know, having a schedule, and for a year, I was really bored and didn't know what to do. And now I'm good because I'm going to the gym every day. So it's kind of my training session that I used to have, you know, at the end of the morning, between 10 and 12. I do like between 11 and 12. And I think my days, you know. And in terms of feelings, you know, pressure, I'm an actor, so I'm on stage. So, you know, sometimes, you know, during the year, I'm going to be on stage or in front of people. So it's kind of the feeling that I had when I was playing at Stamford Bridge. A little bit less.
He goes to the gym with Aubameyang's dad.
That's what he told.
Isn't that right, Frank?
Yes.
Yeah. He's friends with Aubameyang's
dad. Yeah, it's true. Pierre. He was one of my former teammates when I was playing for Laval.
So are you allowed to... do you tell him when you criticise him? Do you tell him? Do you say, I was very rude to your son?
Oh yes, but he knows that, he knows me, and he has no problem whatsoever.
All right, well, listen, do us a favour and ask his dad if he's going to go to Man City.
Ah, okay.
All right.
Okay, you can report back. Fantastic. Guys.
Running.
Yeah, I'm sure he won't tell me.
I did the same. I went to the gym more. When I finished playing, I went to the gym almost every day. And then I played golf. And I was working, but only on weekends. But it's amazing because I really got into going to the gym. And one of the reasons was that it was off my own accord. So I didn't have anybody telling me. Mm. You know, you have to go and run for 2 hours or do this. And so I got into a routine, just doing some treadmill and some stuff and then playing some golf. And I wasn't bored at all. I actually really enjoyed it. Obviously, I'm not going to the gym anymore because the gym's closed.
Oh, that's why.
Home workouts.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Home workouts.
No, just leave it.
I haven't got the willpower for that, drive. I have to be in a certain environment.
Right.
Shaq has seen me.
It's not a pretty sight either.
Is that happening?
No, I've seen him. I've seen him in the gym.
He's...
Well, that doesn't lose you weight.
I have no idea what Kate was doing over there.
Is that how you lift weights?
No idea what just happened.
When the big meatheads are lifting weights in the gym and the big noises.
Well, trust me, before the pandemic, when the gym was open here at work, and we just go in for the cardiovascular. But there are some real meatheads that go in there, and what's really annoying when they're going like rah, but when they're dropping these big huge weights and they just drop them on the floor,
very
freaking annoying.
It is.
Honestly, it is annoying, isn't it?
It is. Mm-hmm. It really
but that's
is.
What they like doing.
They do.
And they're generally bigger than us.
So we can't.
That's why they're lifting very heavy weights.
Shanka, how are you? Were you riding and lifting?
No,
heavy weights?
I wasn't riding anywhere. I was only out of work 4 months before I started here, something like that. And a young family, a lot of kids. My wife just had her fifth, and I was just running after them for 4 months.
And that's how Shaka stays fit.
Running after kids, yeah.
So no rah for Shaka.
No rahs for me.
Anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
No, go.
No, that's fine.
No, please.
No, I'm not going to say it.
You know?
When Craig says it's time to move on, it's time to move on.
Yeah, maybe it's better that way.
Yeah.
We'll end it there, shall we? Yes. Thanks so much for your questions on Extra Time and for everyone for joining us.
Rah!
Rah! See you tomorrow.